Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
I've always tried to keep hope alive that he's alive, but I can't imagine him being alive and never, like, reaching back out to his family. All these years, I've always thought about my aunt and how, you know, she's never moved away. She's never gotten rid of her landline. I feel like that's for Bobby. Like I said, she always stayed in that house, even though they kind of got in a place financially where it's like you can afford to move out of the hood. But I think because of Bobby, she doesn't want to leave, just in case. There were times when they would find bodies and, you know, we need DNA, or there were times when even years after he disappeared that they would call, like, you know, have you guys heard from him at all? And I know that bothered my aunt because I don't think she felt that they did as much as they could have.
Nearly 21 years ago, on October 25th, 2000, 16-year-old Robert Smith left his East Chicago, Indiana home and told his mom that he was going to a friend's house. Robert's mother had a challenging relationship with her son, as many parents of teens can relate. So when he didn't come home that night and failed to attend school the following day, she thought he was simply being rebellious and that he'd be home by the weekend. But Robert didn't come home that weekend, and more than two decades later, he's never been seen or heard from again. With few leads and a police department who told us they have no record of Robert, his family is left to wonder if this case will ever be solved. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 300 of The Vanished, Robert Smith's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. 16-year-old Robert Smith was known as Bobby to his friends and family in his hometown of East Chicago, Indiana. In the year 2000, the U.S. Census counted just over 32,000 people in East Chicago, a town in northwest Indiana that is literally just east of the sprawling metropolis of Chicago, Illinois. At that time, nearly a quarter of the population lived below the poverty line, and many residents were first-generation Americans, including Robert's family, whose mother's side descended from Mexican immigrants. Robert lived with his sister and mother, and had many other extended family members that lived nearby. We spoke to many of Robert's relatives, including his older sister, Regina, and she told us about his childhood.
I know I was 12 years old when he was born, and my mom had to go back to work, so I basically had to watch him. Growing up, he was a carefree kid. His father was not involved in his life after the age of 6, I think. He just moved out and moved on. And so it was just me, my mom, and my brother. So I really had to watch him then. He was in Little League. I do remember that. My brother, like, grew up a long time without a father figure. He might have been, like, 9 or 10 when my mom remarried again.
Bobby came from a close-knit family, and Regina explained that he spent a lot of time with his aunts and cousins.
My mom has 5 sisters, or 4 sisters, and herself. So 2 of the sisters were really close with my mom, and, you know, they all, like, worked together watching the kids. They're all single-parent moms, my cousins. They were really close. They all got along. They all played together, grew up together while their parents worked.
We also spoke to one of Bobby's younger cousins, Jessica, who told us about a fond memory she has of him from childhood.
So Bobby was older than me by a good amount of years, but he was closer in age to my older brother, who was 3 years older than me. And we lived in the next apartment building from my cousin Melissa. So we were all together a lot, but I was like the annoying younger sister. And I have this really great memory of Bobby once coming over, and my brother was at Boy Scouts. And I mean, I was six maybe. And he like sat down and played dolls with me. And that's such a special memory to me now, because that was never how it was.
Sadly, Bobby's father didn't play an active role in his life, and that may have had lasting effects on him, despite the strong support system that was present in his life, via other relatives and relationships, including his mother's current husband, Bobby's stepdad. Bobby's sister Regina told us what she knows about Bobby's dad.
When my mom met him, when she first met him, he was in jail. So then she thought this was a good idea, that he was going to change and he was going to be a better person. And for the most part, he was. He was a good guy in the beginning. He did for us because my mom got divorced. So it was me, my mom, and him. Then when my brother was born, he provided for my brother. When he was born, we did live with him. We lived with his father. And then maybe, I don't think he was five. I think he was like a couple years old. We had an apartment, then we moved to a house. And then he decided that he didn't want to be with my mom anymore. And he moved out and moved on and just left us there. So then we had to move again because my mom couldn't afford all that. We moved to an apartment ourselves. My brother's dad used to pick him up on the weekends and we used to have him. But he didn't pay child support for him either. So he worked construction. So he got paid under the table a lot, so he didn't have to worry about all that, like taxes and all that. So they couldn't take his taxes away. I think it had a big impact on him. My mom remarried again to my stepfather now, and he was like our father figure in our life.
Perhaps due to the lack of a stable father figure, or for any other number of reasons we may never know the answer to, as Bobby reached his teen years, he became a bit rebellious. And Regina told us that their mother struggled to effectively reach Bobby and encourage better decisions.
My mom didn't really have control over him. He kind of did whatever he wanted in the house because he was the only one in the house with my mom. And my stepfather and my mom worked, so my mom wasn't home a lot. I kind of want to say he always did his own thing. I mean, even when I watched him, he was a handful because he would be gone down the street and I'd say, stay in front of the house. And he wouldn't listen. He just, maybe like a rebel, he always wanted to be, you know, like to do his own thing, but started getting really bad when I moved out of my mom's house and my brother stayed. So he was the only one. My stepfather worked long hours and my mom did too. So maybe about 12, I think he got in trouble at school for smoking. 13, he got in trouble for ditching. You know, it started like that. Like it started getting worse in school. So he was always out somewhere with his friends, going somewhere, doing something.
We also spoke to Bobby's mom, Aurora, who explained that Bobby was always very independent. He was a smart kid, but didn't seem motivated to stay in school.
He was like a little man, right, really from the beginning. He grew up really fast, I think. And I think because his dad wasn't around, he just did his own stuff. And he didn't really have a lot of friends. Growing up, I don't know, he just was kind of shy, I guess. He never really liked to talk about a lot of stuff. I would always ask him how's school and everything. He never wanted to talk about it. And he kept himself a lot. In school, he was a smart boy, but he just, after he got into high school and stuff, he just didn't want to go to school. And he always told me, Mom, just take me out of school. I said, no, you're going to go to school. He was a smart boy, you know, he had good grades and everything. Everything came easy to him. I tried to get him like in T-ball and all that, and he did go for a while, but he wasn't like into any of that. He would come home from school and he would just be like, I'm going to go with my friends, and he would just leave, you know, but he usually came home. I know every time he came home, he'd come home at, you know, like a reasonable hour. He would just hang out. I want to say just with his friends, which I never even knew any of his friends. I met a couple of his friends, you know, when he was older, but they wouldn't come over or nothing like that. I think once he got into high school, he changed. I think he liked to hang around with older kids, and he was, like, easily influenced. He got in trouble in school one time because he was smoking, and another time he got caught, he was selling his video games, Game Boy, whatever he had. They caught him, and he had some marijuana on him, and not saying that he was in trouble all the time, but he did get in trouble a couple times.
While Robert had mostly been in trouble for minor things like skipping school and possession of marijuana, things became more serious when he was caught with a weapon.
He was caught carrying a weapon, a gun. I knew it wasn't his, and he was carrying it. He said he was carrying it for a friend. And they picked him up and took him to Crown Point County Jail. They called me, and we had to leave him there for the weekend. And then he kept saying it wasn't his. He was holding it for a friend. And we had to go to court for all that. That's how it started. You know, he was hanging around with his friends and getting into trouble like that. Then he was on a house arrest for a while. That's what they made him do. He couldn't go out for a while. So every time he went to school, I mean, if he went out, I had to call and say he was going to go somewhere, which he didn't. He didn't go nowhere. That went on for a while. Then we went back to court, and they threw it out of court because he was only 15 at the time. That's what happened.
Another cousin we spoke to, Melissa, gave us her perspective on the rebellious phase that Bobby was in around the time he disappeared.
I think he just started hanging with the wrong crowd, and so would be out. And I think he used to smoke weed and be out late. And I don't think his mom knew where he was a lot of the times. And I think that's when he started. In our neighborhood, you know, it's a lot of pressure for males specifically to, you know, join gangs and be around those type of people. His dad, he didn't have a relationship with his dad, so there might have been some issues around that. But he had a stepdad. They didn't get along too well, though. One of the last videos we have of him, it was my little sister's birthday. My little sister, she's 24 now, but I think she was turning 1 or 2. And he was in the background handing her the gift for her to open. And, you know, like back then we had the camcorder. So somebody was recording it and we were watching it. And it was just like trippy to see, you know, him. And my sister was so little, she doesn't remember him at all.
Despite the fact that Bobby was showing a bit of a rebellious side, Jessica remembers how loving he was after the birth of his nephew.
He was a new uncle right when he disappeared. My cousin had just had a baby, and he loved that kid, and that kid loved him. And so we did see a more tender side of him, too, right before he left. Because I really just remember, like, the teenage kind of, like, I don't really want to be around my family as much anymore. I'm starting to hang out with my friends more. Him not being at weekend get-togethers when our moms would get together and we would all.
Even though Robert's cousin Jessica was quite a few years younger, she's never forgotten about the last time she saw her cousin.
The reason why I really remembered Bobby leaving after all these years, the reason it's always stuck so strongly in my mind, was we were driving down the street. I had just been at catechism, which is like a Saturday school for Catholic kids where you learn about Jesus. And my mom picked me up. We were driving home, and we saw him on the street with another young kid. And my mom pulls over and asks him to get in the car with us. Or, well, she asked if he needed a ride home, and he said yes and got in the car with us. She was going to drop me off, then drop him off. And then I don't know if she was going to work or a friend's house, but she was going somewhere else. So when we got to my house for me to go home, he asked if he could just run in really quick and say hi to my brother. And I remember noticing that his hair was darker. He always had really light brown hair. But this last time, his hair was like black. And he came in, and my brother was in the shower. So he was like, oh, well, tell him I was here. Tell him I said hi and bye. And I was like, okay. And then he gave me a hug goodbye. And I remember thinking it was so weird at the time because we didn't hug. I was annoying. I was the little sister. I was, you know, we weren't super affectionate. So I remember thinking it was so strange at the time, but just kind of letting it go as, that was a nice moment. But then he was gone. So after that, the next thing that I know is that he, the day before he disappeared, told his mom he was going to go stay the night at a friend's house. I remember him telling her that he didn't want to go to school anymore. So that was a big thing, was she was like, you know, make sure you get to school. When he didn't show up for school and the school called my aunt, she just thought, well, he said he doesn't want to go to school anymore and that he's just doing what he wants.
Though it's been more than 20 years without any sign of Bobby, Regina explained what she can recall from the day her brother went missing.
I remember the day that he went missing. He told my mom he was going to his friends, which he always did tell my mom where he was going. Not can I, but I'm going. And he went to spend the night at his friend's house. That's what he said. And he was going to go to school in the morning. Well, he never made it to school in the morning. I don't know what happened that night or in the morning. I don't know. We just know that maybe like about 7 or 8 o'clock, he told my mom he was going to his friend's to spend the night. And we never seen him again. I don't even know what friend it was. That's how my mom wasn't really on top of him. She didn't know who the guy was or where he was going or anything like that.
Since Bobby had a history of ditching school, his mom initially thought that was what was happening, and she was also unsure if she could report him missing right away. But as the days wore on, she decided it was time to go to the police.
My mom called the police Thursday when my brother never came home. Okay, so he was supposed to go to school the next day. He didn't go to school. So my mom just thought he ditched. But then after school, he still never came home. My mom got worried and she called the cops. But, you know, they have to be missing 24 hours or 48 hours, whatever it was. So they didn't do a report until like the next day. Then my mom did a report and she said he was missing. And they didn't think it was a big thing. They just thought, he's a runaway. But my mom was like, he really wouldn't run away because he didn't have anything to run away from home for. He had everything at home. My mom gave him money. He didn't have to have a job. He didn't have to do anything. My mom did everything for him. She bought him clothes, everything. So the cops thought he just ran away. So they never really helped.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. There wasn't much to go off of in the first few days after Bobby vanished. His mom wondered if perhaps he had simply run off with friends, and this was the latest incident in his worsening rebellious behavior. However, days after Bobby disappeared, things took a shocking and violent turn at his home.
I wasn't living there at the time, but he left on a Wednesday, October 25th. That Saturday, Somebody threw a Molotov cocktail bomb through my mom's bedroom window. My mom's bedroom window was in the back of the house. Someone got in the backyard and threw the bottle through the window. And it landed in my mom's bed. Her bed was right by the window. And her hair caught on fire. And there was a little fire like in the bed or whatever, but it wasn't a big thing. But the whole house was just in fumes, the nasty smoke smell. It was everywhere. My mom was okay. She didn't really, I don't think, she didn't go to the hospital or nothing like that. But it was just scary to know that then nobody knew what the heck happened because he had already been missing since Wednesday. We looked for him and we couldn't find him. So we didn't know if somebody was after him. We still don't know. We don't know what happened.
There are very few news articles that document Bobby's disappearance, but one of them stated that the incident at Bobby's parents' house took place before he disappeared. However, every single family member that we spoke to said that they specifically remember that it took place just a few days after Bobby said he was going to visit a friend and never returned. Regina was no longer living at home by this time, so Bobby's mom, Aurora, told us what she remembers of that frightening night and how a neighbor came to their rescue.
We were sleeping, and we heard this loud explosion, and it came right through our window, our bedroom window. Luckily, the cocktail didn't go off all the way, so it didn't, like, explode. But I know I just jumped out of bed. My hair was on fire, and my husband was like, your hair. But, you know, I was, like, in shock, I guess. I couldn't believe that happened. Good thing our neighbor, she came by, she threw the water hose inside the window. My husband put the fire out. I was devastated. I'm like, what is going on, you know? Were they after him or were they after us? Or, you know, you don't know what to say, you know? I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And when they came and questioned us, they didn't even know that they had thrown another one in the other bedroom window, but they weren't aware of that one. But later on when we went out to see, I guess they had tried to throw it in. It didn't go in that window, so they threw it in our bedroom window. Yeah, it was like a nightmare. That's really what it was. Thank God to our neighbor that she put the hose in the window and we put the fire out. They came and took a report, and they never really came back and said, well, you know, we couldn't find nothing, no evidence, because they did take the bottle and everything. That's when they said, well, a good thing this bottle, it didn't explode. It just fell on the bed, you know, and caught the bed on fire.
Bobby's cousin Jessica told us her memory of her mom getting a call from Aurora's husband, Jessica's uncle Lewis.
I remember my mom was babysitting my nephew that night. I had a very young nephew, maybe like 6 months at the time. And she got a call from my uncle Lou just saying that they had been bombed, essentially. And my mom thought he was joking at first. Like, she didn't take him serious, but he was like, Laura. She also goes by Laura. She's my tia Laura to me. He says, Laura, her hair was on fire. The bomb like landed in the bed and her hair caught on fire. And so she was outside with the ambulance and he was letting my mom know. And so when my brother Brian, we had his son that night at the house, when he was on his way to come back and pick him up, my mom sent him over to their house to check on them and to see what was going on. And I remember going to the house maybe the next day or 2 days later and seeing surprised me how much damage there was to the rest of the house. There was like soot all over the rest of the house. That's what really stuck out to me was you think like, oh, it's just a little homemade bomb. But no, it did a lot of damage to their house.
Bobby's family believes that the police department didn't do much to find him. But Regina told us what they explained to the family that they did do.
The chief of police went to my mom's house and told her that he was looking and they were My mom lives under the expressway, like under the bridge, and behind there is like swamp. So he claims that they looked just looking for a body at this point. So they looked back there. They said they went through the swamps and looked for him. He said he questioned a couple of his friends. My mom did have a couple people's names. They said they questioned the guys that he said he was with or whatever. But from the beginning, they thought that my mom had my brother somewhere hiding. They didn't never believe that my brother was missing. So they even talked bad about my mom in a newspaper article saying that she wasn't giving information. And my mom was like, I told you everything I know. I don't know what else to tell you. So they badmouthed her in the paper. they called and called. I mean, but it was the same. We didn't have any new information. Like, I don't understand what they didn't understand. They kept calling. They kept coming by. And my mom was like, nothing. I don't know nothing. Haven't heard nothing. I don't know nothing. But they didn't believe her. They thought that she knew what happened.
There was something eerily sinister about the violent attack on Bobby's parents' house, so close to his disappearance. The family was desperately worried about Bobby's safety. Where was he? Who was he with? And was he safe? But there was something else that concerned his family, too, and made them worry for their own safety. This is what Bobby's Aunt Sandy told us about what happened when Bobby's mom tried to talk to the families of Bobby's friends.
The kids that he used to hang around with, she went looking to see if they knew anything about Bobby. And even one mom is like, we don't want to talk to you. And she changed her phone number because she didn't want to be bothered. The kid's mother was a longtime family friend. We weren't close, but her mother and my mother used to be good friends. Laura thought she would be helpful, but she kept saying she didn't want to talk about anything and to leave them alone. And she even changed her phone number so they couldn't get a hold of her.
People in the community seemed scared to talk. Perhaps there was a reason why. Other relatives were known to be involved with gangs, and there was some suspicion about Bobby. Had he become affiliated with some of the dangerous local gangs, whose ties came from the Chicago metro area and had no hesitation about using violence and intimidation? This is what Bobby's cousin Jessica told us.
It was a predominantly Latino and Black neighborhood. A lot of the guys who were in the gang are in jail now. I made a point after Bobby disappeared of always kind of being antisocial in that neighborhood. I didn't want to be in that life. I didn't want anything to do with those people who could disrupt a family the way that they did. Getting involved with gangs like this, you know, from a young age, I've just always thought is a family destroyer. I always heard that Bobby was a member of IG, which is Imperial Gangsters, just from asking around over the years, because I was trying to find out a little bit of information if I did ever come in contact with somebody who was affiliated. So I found out that IG has two separate groups, and I think one is the Harbor and one is the East Chicago side of East Chicago. I'm not certain, but I'm pretty sure that's how it worked. Is there was Trey 9, which was the Harbor, and there was 4-9, which was the rest of East Chicago. And they were part of the same group, but they were also like enemies. I'm not certain. Like, I know they were differing gangs that were like, this is our territory, you know? And that I believe Bobby was a part of the group called 4-9 because that was the area that was East Chicago.
We did some research into the gang organization that Jessica mentioned because we wanted to better understand the dynamics of gangs in general. This is what we learned. According to trial transcripts we found involving the plea agreement of a member of the Imperial Gangsters from East Chicago, Indiana, who was involved with a gang during the time that Bobby was growing up, the gang initiates members from a very young age. The defendant in one case testified that he was brought into the organization at the age of 13. He described gang activity that included violence against other members, trafficking of weapons and drugs throughout the region, and ongoing turf wars with other gangs. When asked by the prosecutor why he joined the gang, the defendant said that he had to because the only other option was to join the rival gang. When we put this perspective into thinking about Bobby's life, the predatory nature of gangs seems to take on a life of its own in his story. Bobby didn't have a consistent father figure. Former gang members often cite the lack of family structure, an absence of adult role models as the primary reason they joined a gang. Additionally, East Chicago is a historically impoverished town, where gangs are able to flourish, and the police typically don't have the resources to adequately address the problem. Regina told us more about this.
I don't know for sure, but there was talk that he was in a gang, and my mom told the cops that because she didn't know, because she doesn't know for sure about, she wasn't for sure about anything, but she didn't know if that was true or not, but that we just told them what we knew. That's what we had heard. And I don't think they did anything because they just don't care. I mean, really, in 20 years, they've only contacted my mom like in the beginning when it happened. And now we haven't heard anything from them. I guess cases go cold and not even a phone call my mom has gotten from them. So, and the guy who was in charge of the case, his name was Ralph Flores. He was I don't know if he was an investigator or whatever he was. I heard he retired, so I figured, well, they're probably not going to do anything about that anymore anyway.
Bobby's cousin Jessica said that she feels like gang affiliation is nearly unavoidable for young men in East Chicago.
It's not always, oh, you grow up looking up to somebody who's in a gang. Sometimes it just seems like they're offering you protection, or they're offering you money, or they're offering you things that you wouldn't have otherwise. It's just something that people fall into in that area. You know, I knew a kid from, we were in gifted and talented classes together, and I always thought he would grow up to be like a scientist or a mathematician. And instead he got bullied in junior high and he joined a gang and he went to jail and somebody murdered him. The city just kind of pushes you into these gangs. I think maybe that it was cool. I think that's maybe it was his friends doing it, that it's what was cool. I think that for a certain type of younger kid in East Chicago who maybe wasn't planning on going to college, who maybe thought they would just end up working in a mechanic shop or in a restaurant, I think for them, it seems like a better option. For a lot of people, it just seems like the logical next step. And it's probably because they have influence that they see are outdoing that same kind of behavior.
The possibility that Bobby was involved with the gang could be an explanation for who was responsible for the attack on his parents' house with the explosive device several days after he had disappeared. But the police have never determined who was responsible or what the possible motive was. But there was another tip that lent credence to Bobby's possible gang involvement. Jessica told us about a rumor she heard about something that had happened prior to Bobby's disappearance.
What it was with Bobby, I always heard that he was a lookout with another kid. I don't know what his name was, but I do know that it was, from what I heard, it was Bobby and this other kid who was his age, and they were lookouts on a shooting, and that is why they disappeared. It just seemed like something out of a movie almost. Like, I didn't understand, like, why he was gone already. Why would they come after his house? Why would they come after his parents? But who knows? I don't even know who was coming after him. Maybe it was a retaliating gang. I have no idea. And I've always been worried for my aunt, because if they knew where they lived and it was just my aunt and my uncle living there, you know, who knows? Like, if anyone could come up and just try and say something to her, do, you know, like, I was always worried for her after that. Whoever did this to their house would know. And I have no idea who would have any reason to, like, want to attack them. And I guess I assume if they did a shooting, maybe it was on another, like, a rival gang.
Strangely, Jessica and other family members began to hear stories about Bobby and other young men being sent to Texas. They never knew where or exactly why, but it gave them hope that Bobby could be alive and maybe needed to get away from the dangers in East Chicago after witnessing a shooting.
I would hear about other kids in gangs that would get sent back to Texas, because I do know I've heard about other kids over the years who they got in trouble and they were sent back to Texas. And I don't know if it was just like a, you know, protect our family type of deal. I know that Bobby's not the only kid that I've heard that about over the years. Some kids do get away. Some kids do a lot better. I think he was a part of something and he tried to escape, but you know, I think maybe he went away because that's what the other people in the gang were doing, and I don't know.
We don't know who the other person is that Jessica mentioned had disappeared, and didn't find any records of someone around Bobby's age that disappeared in the same time period. However, the person Jessica heard about may have been one of Bobby's friends, who suddenly relocated to Texas not long after Bobby had vanished. Jessica told us that she heard of people being sent to Texas and elsewhere to separate them from the negative influences in East Chicago. On the surface, the story that Jessica has heard about Bobby being sent to Texas seems a bit far-fetched. Who would have sent Bobby there? And why would he go this long without contacting his family? Regina told us what she knows of this story about Bobby witnessing a murder and the possibility that he went to Texas.
That cop who came to the house told my mom that my brother was down the street. Something happened at a bar where someone died or someone got shot and died. The guy that he was friends with here, I don't know if that's the same one that he spent the night with that last night we talked to him or not, but he moved to Texas and they said that he was with that my brother was with him. Well, there was like a lot of rumors that came to my mom, like after kids would call and look for my brother. And I don't know, just like weird stuff. And we were like, why would anyone call and look for him when they know everyone knew he was gone, but nobody knew where or nobody said where.
Regina told us that the investigator said that he spoke to the friend who had moved to Texas in order to try to get some answers, but he claimed that he knew nothing about what happened to Bobby. Earlier, Regina mentioned a news article that was published that implied that her mother knew more than she was telling authorities. The article Regina was referring to was published in the Times of Northwest Indiana on October 20th, 2003. 3 years after Bobby had disappeared. Sergeant Ralph Flores was interviewed for the article and stated that he believed Bobby saw something he wasn't supposed to see and that he believed he had gang ties. Sergeant Flores went on to say that some of Bobby's close friends had since traveled to Texas. It was his belief that Bobby had witnessed a homicide in the region before he disappeared. He told the reporter that Bobby's mother had rarely returned his calls, and they had only spoken to her when they showed up at her front door and she happened to be there. Bobby's mom told us about her interactions with law enforcement from her perspective.
We went to the police station and we filed a report. And they're like, well, did he run away? I'm like, well, we don't know what happened. That's what you guys come in for, you know? And they were like, oh, okay, we'll put a missing report. They would come time and time and check, but, you know, he never came back. And then people said they had seen him. And when I called the school to find out if anybody knew anything, and a couple little girls like, yeah, we saw him. We saw him in the street, whatever, hanging with his friends. But after that, that was it. I never saw him again. They gave me a hard time. They were like, well, you know, he's probably in the gang and all this. You know, they try to put him down. And I'm like, you know, well, if he is, what I'm reporting is that he's missing, you know, and I want to know where he's at. Can you help me find him? After that, there was an article on the paper that Flores had said that I was trying to avoid him. And no, it didn't happen that way. He was the one that, once they knew he was affiliated with the gang, whatever, to me, they really didn't care. And they said he was witnessed a shooting or something. That's why they picked him up one time, too. There was a shooting in a bar, and supposedly he witnessed it. That's the only thing that they told me, policemen. They would come by and, you know, they thought maybe I knew something which I didn't know, and they thought I was covering up for him. I told them what I knew, but then they were like, oh, no, you must know something because you're just too calm. I'm like, what am I going to do? I says, I don't know he's doing anything. I've never caught him doing anything, actually seen him doing anything. But, you know, I would ask him, and he'd be like, no, I don't know nothing about that. I'm like, are you sure? He goes, yes, yes, I don't know. Yeah, that's what they told me, that he had witnessed something. And they really never really looked for him. A couple times, his friends, one time he had this little friend, I can't remember his last name, but I know his first name was Jason. He would call and ask for him, and I'm like, he's not home. And then one time he even called and said, oh, you know what? They found his body. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, somebody said that they found his body by the pits. They said that they had found his body right where I live. It's a bridge. Somebody said that they saw a body there, and they said it was him. So when I got a hold of the policeman, they went out there, but they really never found anything.
In that clip that you just heard, Aurora mentioned that Bobby had been picked up by the police prior to his disappearance and was questioned about the shooting that they believe he witnessed. Could this have put Bobby's life in danger?
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Bobby's cousin Melissa shared her perspective with us on the prevalence of the gangs in East Chicago and the apparent lack of police interest in combating them.
There is definitely more pressure for males there. But the gangs run the streets over there, you know. You know where you can go. You know where you can't go. The last time that he was there with his friends, he must have witnessed something that he wasn't supposed to see. And so there was pressure on other, I don't know what age, I don't know who, whoever that group was, there was pressure on them to make sure that those, whoever witnessed it, is not ever going to talk. And I think he knew that. I think he felt like he needed to go. He needed to leave because probably told him they were going to kill him, or they probably told him they were going to hurt his family, or they threatened his life. And so I think he left, but I don't think he got very far because the people probably helped him leave. Or the same people. It's all one big circle. And so when it comes down to who's going to go to jail, it's not going to be me. And so then there's that whole, like, you think you have your gang family and there's loyalty there, but there's no loyalty. Even the cops are crooked as hell over there. Even the cops are gangbangers over there. So you're not safe.
We mentioned earlier that Bobby's dad was involved in his life when Bobby was little. But by the time he reached adolescence, he was nowhere to be found and seemed to have moved on with his life and started a new family. Years after Bobby vanished, one of his aunts ran into Bobby's dad and asked him if he knew his son was missing. Regina told us that she's still shocked by his answer.
He had been missing maybe a couple years, and one of my aunts went into a bank here in East Chicago and saw his father, because my mom had no contact with him after the age of, I don't know if it was 8 or 9. And my aunt saw him, and my aunt told his father, "Did you know that your son's missing?" And my aunt said that she was like just standing there waiting for him to give her a response. And he said, "Yeah, I heard." That was it. I think they asked my mom for information about the father, and my mom told him what she knew, but she didn't really know too much because she didn't talk to him anymore. That was another rumor, that my brother was with his father. But if he knew, if the father knew that he was missing, why wouldn't he have tried at least to see if he's okay or something? I don't know. It was really weird. But I mean, that's your son. I mean, even though you haven't seen him forever or whatever, but you would want to know if he's alive. That was just really weird.
We thought it was strange that Bobby's dad didn't seem to care that his son was missing. But many years after Bobby disappeared, there was another odd event when his mom's sister, Sandy, received an eerily familiar Facebook request. Here's Sandy.
It was like 2015. I got a friend request from a William Robert Smith. Sounded, you know, just too close to his name. Like, he's Robert William, but it was William Robert. And it was a young guy. So I accepted the friend request, and then I was getting ready to go home. Usually I go home once a year for about two weeks. And, you know, so I'm meeting up with everybody, and every day I'll post pictures, you know, of who I saw, or, you know, friends, family and everything. So I accepted the friend request. I didn't think anything of it. I went home and, you know, I was doing my daily posts of who, you know, who I had seen that day and pictures when we got together. And I always stay at my sister Laura's house when I go home. So it was my last day there that this guy messaged me, and he's like, you know, hello, how was your day? And so I was like, oh, okay. So then I remembered about that, you know, and I'm like, I wonder if this is him. So then I just said, I had a great day. I got to see a lot of friends and family. I said, but I have a question for you. And then he came back and he said, what's that? And I said, well, I have a nephew that's been missing, and his name is Robert William Smith. Is there any chance this could be you? And then he said, no. He goes, well, I'm sorry to hear that, but no, it's not. Have a good rest of your trip, or something like that. And then maybe like the next day when I got home, I went to see if he had messaged anything else. And then I couldn't find him anymore. Like, he had unfriended me and blocked me because I couldn't even pull up his name or anything anymore. And I just thought that was so weird. And so I was telling my niece, I said, I thought this was him. I said, and if it was, good, because you saw all the pictures of all the family, that everybody's okay. You know, if it was him, and if it wasn't, well, then I don't know. But I just thought that was so weird. And I did. I had saved his profile picture, and I sent it to, like, to my older son and to my niece that was close to him. I'm like, do you think this is Bobby? And they both said no, but I don't know. To me, it kind of looked like what he could look like.
It's been more than 20 years since Bobby was last seen alive. Being a mom herself has changed Regina's perspective on things, and she remains hopeful that her brother is out there somewhere alive. But she also wonders how he would have made it all of these years out there alone, without popping up on the radar somewhere.
I hate to think the worst, and I try to keep positive for my mom, because I have two sons too, and one of them is about to be 15. So I hate to think that I would never see my son again. And you don't know from day to day if he's alive or dead. And there was talk of them. Somebody had him. There was a little girl that he talked to. She used to come to my mom's house and ask, like, is he home yet? Is he home yet? And my mom would be like, no. And she's like, oh, I heard this or I heard that. She heard a lot of rumors, but she could never say, like, from who, or never produce where they came from or whatever. She said that one day she had heard that they tortured him and killed him, but we never found a body. So, I mean, I know that it could be possible, but it's just weird to me, like, how if it happened in East Chicago and there was a body somewhere, I think they would have found it. I mean, I pray to God that he's still alive and he's doing whatever he got to do and he's okay. But it's just weird that how could it be 20 years and he not contact no one in our family? He didn't take anything with him but the clothes that he had on his back. How can he even get a job, or how can he do anything? He didn't take his wallet. He didn't have ID. Everything was here in his room.
Bobby's cousin Jessica also holds out hope that he's alive and thinks about the reasons why he may have stayed away for all of these years.
I've always tried to keep hope alive that he's alive, but I can't imagine him being alive and never, like, reaching back out to his family. But, I mean, if he thinks it's for the better, he thinks he's not safe coming home. I mean, they bombed his house after he left. So I can imagine him not wanting to involve his family in anything he could get involved in. The one thing where I feel like when I hope that he is alive, I think maybe he stayed away either because he was ashamed to come home, or because he thought it might be a conflict of their safety.
Like her other relatives, Bobby's cousin Melissa has always remained optimistic that Bobby's out there somewhere, but acknowledges that as the years continue to pass, she knows the chances of finding him alive are unlikely.
For me, there was always a hope of he was just hiding out for a while and he was going to come back when the coast was clear, right? Or he was going to reach out and say, hey, can you send me money? Or, hey, you know, I'm here, just I'm letting you guys know I'm safe. And as years went by and that didn't happen, it kind of became more of an acceptance of, you don't want to lose hope, but accepting that he probably is not alive. We never had to have a funeral because we didn't get that. It's still a glimpse of hope that maybe one day he would come home. I was about 17 years old, and I don't even remember it so clearly. It's so long ago. But I just remember knowing that there's a lot of gang activity where our neighbor, you know, where we're from, that we weren't going to be on top of the police's list. The way that black and brown boys are swept under the rug, and they're just probably overwhelmed. The amount of gang activity and things that happen, probably in their mind, another less thug on the street that they have to worry about. He had a real family, and we were all there for him, and we were all in the same vicinity. It's not like we were far, you know. And so I think when he went missing, I took it very personal because me and him were really close. So I think where we're at right now is just not having the answers, you know, what happened to him. So for me, at first, I'm hearing that he left. And I'm like, well, if he left, if he saw something, he got involved into something that could be a risk to his life and he had to leave, he's going to reach out to me. I just knew that in my heart and in my head that he was going to reach out to me. And when years went by and he never did, it had a toll on me. He was friends, actually, with one of my ex-boyfriends. Around that time, we had broke up. So the disappearance of my cousin and that breakup, that was like my first love. You know, I was a teenager and didn't know anything about love. But you think it's serious when you're in it. That played a toll on me as far as me starting to rebel and me going into my teenage phase where I didn't drugs and alcohol and messed up at school. I had to repeat a year in school. It was a hard time for me. When years went by, and it, you know, I had to do a lot of internal work and healing that part because he never did reach out to me.
Melissa and Jessica lost their cousin. But for Regina, losing her little brother under such strange and unresolved circumstances has made her a more protective parent to her own boys. She knows the pain of losing someone in an instant and can't bear the thought of going through that with her own children.
It's really hard because my kids are now like, oh my gosh, why do you ask so many questions? Because I am like, oh no, that can't happen to me. So my oldest is 22. And every time he leaves that house, I'm like, where are you going? Who are you with? When are you coming back? I mean, he has his own car. He has his own everything. But I am just so paranoid about that. I just freak out every time and think about it. My youngest is 15. He's going to be 15. He goes to the high school 4 blocks down from my house. And I still don't let him walk to school because I fear I'll never see him again.
Bobby's disappearance has had a lasting effect on his family. Some relatives have moved away from East Chicago, while others remain and hold out hope not just for Bobby's return, but for their community to be returned to them from the gang's stronghold, which persists even today. We made multiple attempts to talk with the police, who told us the following in writing in response to our records request. Quote, I'm responding to your request for any and all information regarding the October 2000 disappearance of Robert William Smith, East Chicago Police Department case number 00-9854. Our agency does not have any record on file for this case. After receiving that response, we thought, how could this be? Bobby is listed in the NamUs database and the East Chicago Police Department is the investigating agency. How can they have no record of him? Did they lose his file? Thinking this must be a mistake, we kept pushing for answers. After we provided their department with Bobby's active NCIC number and entry, they told us via email that they were too busy working a homicide, but if they found any information about Bobby, they'd let us know. That was 6 months ago, and we haven't received any response to further requests. We often cover cases that seem to have been neglected by the police. But it's important to remember that Bobby was a child. He was only 16 when he disappeared. Even prior to that, it seems as though he was the victim of the predatory behavior of opportunistic gang members and negative influences who saw nothing more in Bobby than a kid who didn't like school and didn't mind rebelling against his mother and stepfather. But Bobby was so much more than that. And though it appears the police view him in much the same light as the gangs, he's still a missing child who lost the entire life he had ahead of him. And there are many family members he's never even had the chance to meet. So what happened to 16-year-old Robert Smith when he left his home on October 25th, 2000, supposedly to go see a friend? Who was he going to see? And did he ever make it? Was it possible that he actually did witness a murder and was later murdered by a gang he belonged to or another local rival gang? And what about that Molotov cocktail thrown into his parents' home while they were sleeping just days after Bobby had disappeared? Was it done to scare his parents into not going to the police about Bobby's disappearance? Or could it have been someone after Bobby? If Bobby did take off because he knew he was in danger, could that have been someone looking for Bobby? There was also that strange Facebook friend request that Bobby's Aunt Sandy got many years after his disappearance. And the person initially seemed eager to talk to Sandy about her recently posted family pictures, but then quickly disappeared and blocked Sandy. The person had the same name as Bobby, with just the first and middle name switched. Jessica told us that she's heard stories of teens being sent away to separate them from the influence of gangs, but none of Bobby's family members have ever received any word or indication that he was with family in another state. Is it possible that Bobby did make it out safely and was able to assume a new identity and life? Bobby's family certainly hopes that that is what happened, but they also try to remain realistic and know that it was possible that he was murdered so many years ago. At the time of his disappearance, Robert Smith was 16 years old. He was approximately 5'4" tall and weighed around 120 pounds. He had brown hair and brown eyes. If you have any information about Robert Smith's disappearance, please call the East Chicago Police Department at 219-391-8450 or the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST.
I personally don't believe that he's deceased. I feel like he's off living somewhere, living away from us. And I don't know if it's because of a safety issue, you know, because of the gang activity. Is it safer for him not to come around the family? Safer for us or safer for him? Or I also learned that when he was little, he used to say, when I grow up, I'm going to run away and you guys are never going to find me. You know, and then I thought about that too. I'm like, well, maybe he did. Maybe that's what he wanted to do and that's what he did. And so I wouldn't even know that if we did find him, would he want to come home? My older son was in a gang. My son, I didn't even know he was in a gang because I'm a single mom, but I was very strict with my kids. They still tell me this, that I was so strict. And I would tell him, you need to be home by 9 o'clock on school night, 9 o'clock. And on the weekends, it was 10 o'clock with his curfew. And he was always home on the time. When I found out he was in a gang, I'm like, what? This was, you know, after. I was like, what? He goes, yeah, mom, you didn't know. I'm like, no. He goes, I'm surprised. You know everybody in town. I said, yeah, but obviously I didn't associate with gang people, so, you know, how was I supposed to know? I didn't know Bobby was in one either. I never would have guessed it because, like I said, you know, my family was kind of close when I lived back home, and we would get together birthdays, holidays, anything. Father's Day, Mother's Day, cookout. Somebody would cook dinner, everybody come over. So he was always there with us.
I just don't know. It's just like he just disappeared. Maybe the gang members did kill him, or that's what I think. Something had to happen that he wouldn't come back home. For him to just have disappeared like that and nobody knows nothing. Not knowing is the worst. I think really something bad happened that he had to leave. And I guess maybe to protect us, he had to move away. I don't know. I don't even know what to think anymore. He would have got in contact with us, something. Because we still live in the same place, still have the same phone number. I don't believe, that's why I said something had to have happened.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of episode 300. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to support The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be covering a case from Washington. Thanks for listening.
Around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.